Thanks, Joan and Jimmy, for having me out. Thanks to all the other readers. Bob Pajic was supposed to read with us tonight, but you have to book Bob Pajic like 2 years in advance, I guess. So he's not here, but I wanted to read a poem dedicated to him and Gerald Stern. This is called Angels with Ugly Faces, or the cover of Gerald Stern's The Red Coal. I can't remember if it was before or after I took you to Denny's bar for your 21st birthday, and you drank buttery nipples and large beers while squeezed between old alcoholic men who downed large beers and short whiskeys and marveled at your enthusiasm. But you showed up at my apartment with a copy of The Red Coal you'd borrowed from the Carnegie Library, with Stern and his pal Jack Gilbert sharing the cover photo. One shot of them as old and ugly, and the other shot of them as young and ugly. And by ugly, I mean Stern. Jack Gilbert was as handsome as a movie star. And you were too, Bob, even as my face had already started to collapse from reading and writing more than I slept. I was 24 and believed poetry was an element no different than oxygen or carbon, and at least as important as a ham sandwich for survival. So you were finally legal and hugged the whole bar, then stumbled back to my apartment like a man losing his legs. I tucked you in bed and kissed your beautiful forehead. I knew the blessing I'd found in your friendship, and it was more than the woman who was not my fiance, who I flirted with all night and headed off to meet at 3 a.m. hoping to get laid. The Stern book was a miracle, how it put a mirror to our city and reflected back words we dreamed someday to write, even as we drove bridges losing tension to old age and walked hills that stole our breath. If we looked hard into our drinks and asked to be famous, allow me to apologize for our ignorant desires. I have a library at home the size of my old apartment, and we have drunk 5,000 beers in the 20 years since. The spring of 1995 looks like a wing now, and death has been longer coming than I imagined. So it is that two young men from Western Pennsylvania, with fathers stuck in factories and UPS trucks, with mothers working in Walmart and public schools, who believe Pittsburgh more beautiful than Paris, came to find God inside a book of poems written by a man with a bulldog face who stumbled these same streets and flicked words like matches on paper as fine as hardwood. Bob, I hope I tell you I love you often enough. Bob, you puked on my sheets that night. I always wanted to work that into a poem. Frick Park. A gray-haired man stops walking his dog to talk to another gray-haired man about his second heart attack, both smoking cigars. I'm gonna read some work poems. These are about bad jobs. This is called Jail Time. Midnight is fine, even 2 a.m., but after that, things get weird, especially if you're spanked. So I finish the late shift in my second job and go straight home, and the next day on the early shift of my first job, someone says, "Dom stabbed a guy in the head with a fork." I say, "Why would he do that?" And the guy says, "Fucking Dom," and shrugs. Not as an indictment of Dom, but as an insight into a certain kind of lifestyle that happens after 3 a.m. in certain places where certain people meet. I mean to have something to say to all this violence, but it's early and I'm mostly happy my face didn't end up a roast with a fork wagging from it. A day later, I see Dom, who looks rugged, even for Dom, even for a guy who collects trouble like pocket change, and I say, "Why'd you stab a dude in the face?" And he says, fuck that dude. And I say, where'd you get a fork? And he says, in the kitchen. And I say, oh, like a kitchen is a surprising place to find a fork. Dom stands there, bored. I know I do illegal things, but the illegal things I do should be legal. So I forgive myself and confuse myself simultaneously. I also leave my keys in my unlocked car, which everyone who has ridden with me knows, and somehow Dom decides to borrow my car without asking or even telling me. Only the left taillight is out, so you have to be careful about not drinking and driving and the roads you take, none of which Dom is. So the cops pick him up, and he's drivably drunk. So they take him to a holding cell, then to county. And the next time I see him, he's dressed in an orange jumpsuit, handcuffed, with his ankles in shackles. It cost me $180 to get my car from the pound. I'm pissed at Dom. I'm pissed at myself. I never run from these things, because where do you run when this is what you do, and this is where you live, and this is who you work with? But I get weary, and I get lost, I get exhausted and confused. A month later, Dom gets into a fight with his fiance's brother. The brother said something, probably something like, please don't marry my sister. And Dom hit him with a whiskey bottle. Dom insists he's going to pay me back for the tow truck and the impound, but he's in jail for another 90 days now. Someone who works says, those guards peek up your ass when you go to prison, yo. And someone else says, of course they do, but not me. I drive home safely in my car with one tail light busted, the other shining bright. Today, I almost called McDonald's. This is a looking for work poem. Today, I almost called McDonald's to see about their manager training program, Hamburger U, as it was called in the one ads. Then I came to my senses, called the bank, and put a stop on the check that was supposed to be for my electric bill, because who needs light during the summer, and it's July now, bright, until late in the day, and besides, I worked for Burger King before, and I hated getting burned by fry grease, and the manager kept pinching my ass and being snide. So I settled back on the couch for a snooze, then sent out two resumes for jobs I'm not qualified for, or I'm overqualified for, meaning I went to school forever, but never acquired a marketable skill, because I thought attending school made me marketable, but instead I got a job as a janitor, then a daycare worker, then I drove truck, and I once sold steroids to muscleheads, which makes my resume impossible to explain to the district manager of Bed Bath & Beyond like I needed to do last month when he looked at me and said, why exactly would I want to hire you? And I didn't have an answer for him, just like I don't know why I applied for those jobs today, because I really wouldn't want to manage a hardware store or a lumber yard, considering I never learned how to drive a nail in college where they wanted me to read Foucault, which made me want to put my head in the oven or smoke a tailpipe in a locked garage. So when I'm broke and not thinking rationally, and I wish someone paid for that, because I'm great at it. Dreaming, I mean. But the bills keep piling up, and the lady from the student loan company says, you really need to get straight with us. Which was the problem to begin with, believing an education would get me straight, when all it did was confuse everything and make me not want to work at anything but writing poems in my little apartment. And besides, what kind of company lends money to a guy who believes he can make a living writing poems in America? America doesn't read poems. We barely even share. Johnstown, Pennsylvania. the chief of police tasered his son at Thanksgiving dinner. The title of this one's longer than the actual poem. This is called "To the Woman in the Grocery Store Line Who Complains About the Man in Front of Us Because He Wears Nike Shoes and Pays for His Groceries with Food Stamps." It's possible that he, like many intelligent consumers, bought the shoes on sale. This is my two-poem warning. It's called "Hello, Piano." Hello, piano, I'm sorry you weigh 800 pounds. I'm sorry your legs are skinny as a wimp. I'm sorry there's nowhere to grab, piano. I lift weights and jog, and you are so fat. I'd fight you drunk in a bar, piano. I'd be like, the fuck are you looking at? But you are owned by a 16-year-old girl who loves Elton John and Billy Joel, and whose grandma loves Beethoven, and whose father built this house with a music room and sound curtains, and built the next house, a mansion, with a larger music room, with thicker sound curtains, and a lower ceiling, and who must surely have $20 bills like seeds in his pockets. He'd like to plant in the working class garden of my life. You and I are the same, piano. We're both about to get broken. We're both about to get played. This is called "The Old Drunken Immortals," and is an epigraph from Lee Poe that says, "Must be heaven's immortals in a drunken frenzy, grabbing cloud and grinding it in the white dust." On my lunch break, I sneak off to read some Lee Poe poems. An hour later, I have everyone talking about grabbing cloud and grinding dust. Nobody cares what it means. They just like the sound, especially drunken frenzy. A poetry better than carrying furniture or mandatory overtime. Eventually, one guy asks, "Who wrote that?" And I say, "Li Po, the great Chinese poet." And he says, "Ah, thank you very much." In the worst Chinese accent this side of a 1930s Charlie Chan movie, and starts to bow like a humble servant. Pretty soon, everyone bows like humble servants, because we are humble servants. And I bow the deepest, and someone asks, "Li Po dead?" And I say, "Like 1,200 years ago." And someone else asks, "Did Li Po drink?" And I say, "Li Po was an immortal drunk. He couldn't keep a job because he was drunk." Only now I'm carrying a wall-length mirror balanced on my hip while telling the story of Li Po, how he was smashed on wine high in the mountains and saw the reflection of the moon shimmering on the surface of a lake, and how he decided he would make love to her, the moon. So he wrote a note, left it by a rock with his wine bottle, then dove 100 feet like some strange bird and drowned. Which is more or less true? Or more or less not true. Because another book says he fell from a small boat while trying to embrace the moon. Not as interesting as diving and fucking, but such is the myth of Li Po. You tell it how you need to tell it. If you are broke, Li Po is your poet. If you are kind, Li Po is your poet. If your hands are covered in blisters and your legs cramp when you work, if you are so buried in debt the sky looks like a bill, Li Po is your poet. So celebrate. I move to the truck with a mirror on my hip like I have wings, like an angel. Like I can fly, like I don't give a fuck, like a drunk Li Po whose story I tell with wine, with height, with danger and a horrible splash, and the mirror slips, and the mirror falls, and the mirror shatters until I stand over my reflection in hundreds of ugly pieces, and really, what the fuck is poetry? The books I've read are nowhere near the numbers of hours I've worked. One terrible coworker says, "You're gonna get fucking docked," and wipes his forehead with his shirt. Another terrible coworker says, "You're gonna get fired," and points his finger like a pistol and shoots the bullet with his mouth. The glass is on the street, and I need a broom. Such is my own myth, one of ineptitude, sobriety, and clumsy work. Later, my boss shows up and says, "The truck is going to California. They probably won't remember their stupid fucking mirror." Meaning, I'll pay for it if they do. And later, a guy who will soon leave this job to start dealing hard drugs says, "What's that mean? The thing about the immortals in a drunken frenzy, the clouds and the white dust." And I tell him, "It's about snow. It's about Li Po in the courtyard during winter. It's about noticing the details the world walks over before they're stomped in mud." And he says, "Shit, I thought it was about cocaine."